Okay, good morning, everyone. Short about me. I'm a PhD student at the Department of Informatics in the Sirius group. My interests are in semantic technologies and natural language and machine learning. So we're looking at how we can make data accessible from natural language texts using semantic technologies. Today we're going to speak about Resource Description Framework, or RDF. Let's see if I can. We'll have a short introduction, and we will look at RDF data model, some technicalities and features. Before we go into RDF serializations, vocabularies, and a bit about RDF on the web, before we look at some subtleties. But first, remember that we'll be having quite some mandatory assignments in this course, right? The first one will be published today, which is the topic of the first assignment is RDF, so you better try to look at the lecture, and you will be writing triples and RDF graphs. This is a short mandatory exercise. You'll be having only on 1 week, which is the case for the first four mandatory exercises. And there will be only one attempt, but you will have the opportunity to check the solution before you deliver in Mr. Oblig. For information about Mr. Oblig, you can look at the semester page. And then there will be two larger obligs with two possible attempts, the fifth and the sixth, where you will have about 2 weeks, and there will be no Mr. Oblig on these exercises, but you will have 2 weeks, and if you fail, you will get another attempt before. These are larger obligs, as I said, more theoretical, and there will be some additional exercises for the master course. And then in the end, there will be one short oblig about author templates, and the last oblig, the last mandatory assignment, and there you will have the opportunity to check the delivery before you deliver, as I understand. So if there are any questions about the obligs. No, everything is clear? Yeah. And you will, of course, have the opportunity to ask during lecture and group sessions. Yeah? It will be handed in Devilry. Devilry. It's a university solution for delivering mandatory assignments. You haven't used that before? Haven't you used that before? Okay. I can maybe show you during the break. Yeah? See if I can help you. If not, you will have, suppose, the opportunity to ask during the group sessions as well. Okay. First, short, what is RDF? RDF is a framework for data exchange on the web. It is. It has some features that makes it a lot easier to merge and interchange data if you compare it to common databases. I assume you're sort of have an understanding or background in normal relational databases, right? And maybe even XML. Well, this RDF has some features that makes it easy to merge data sets and exchange information across data sets that you will not find in normal relational databases. it extends the linking structure of the web in a way that in the web you link to another resource or another page. So there is a relation from with this page and this page. It extends this to make the type of relationship between things explicit. It allows data to be mixed and exposed and shared across different applications. So you're supposed to be able to just create different applications on top of this, and you don't have to add so much transformation and extra logic in order to be able to share data. The linking structure forms a labeled directed graph. The graph view, we will be looking at it. It is an easy possible mental model for RDF, even though it's not completely capture what an RDF graph is, but it's used to give some understanding and as a visual explanation. Have you seen the semantic web stack before? I'm sure you'll be seeing it several times during this course. Here you can see the technologies that are involved in the semantic web. You see in the bottom we find URI and Unicode and XML, as most of you are kind of familiar with. And then you find the RDF almost at the bottom. And there are, it's like the first semantic block in the stack. And we will be looking at several of these technologies in the course. We will be looking at OWL and RDFS for ontologies. We will be looking at Sparkle for querying the database or the data set. We'll be looking at some basic logic, even proofs. And you will have the opportunity and you will create applications on top of this stack. Next week we will be you will have an introduction to Jena, which is a Java framework for working with semantic technologies. If there are any questions, you can of course ask. So we will today look at RDF, and we will later look at Sparkle, RDFS, OWL, logic, and applications. So yeah, RDF was first created in 1999, and it was initially a framework as intended for annotation of web accessible resources. It has developed since and is now a more general purpose language for describing structured information. It can be on the web, but it could also possibly be on your laptop. You can consider it like similar to a normal database. You can create a database using this RDF and semantic technologies on your computer, and can also publish it online. The goal of the RDF is to enable application to exchange data on the web in a meaning-preserving way. It's considered to be the basic representation format in underlying the semantic web. Like, if you represent your data as a tabular format, like CSV or even relational databases, it's not very straightforward to exchange that data with another data set, because some of the information is in the tables, right? Like you have the column names. So if you just extract data by using a query and send that to another application, you will have to add some logic or some information in order to reconstruct that data. On the other hand, RDF aims to like keep that information inside the structure of the data itself. So now we'll be looking at the data model and some technicalities and features. In RDF, all information is expressed as a triple. A triple consists of a subject, a predicate, and an object. Are these sort of familiar terms, right? A subject could be like the the person that we're speaking about, and the predicate is like a verb term, and the object is what it is affecting or the result or something. For example, we can make a triple that states that Norway has the capital Oslo, where Norway is the subject, has capital would be the predicate, and Oslo will be the object. In the same way, we can state that Norway has the King Harald, where Norway's the subject, and we change the predicate to has king, and King Harald would be the object then. Is this clear? In the same way, King Harald could be the subject, and we can express that he's born in 1937 by using a triple where King Harald is a subject, born in year is a predicate, and 1937 is the object. This is the very basic structure of an RDF triple. As I said, RDF is sometimes used interchangeably with the RDF triple, and even we use RDF statement or an RDF fact. And RDF really is speaking about the framework, the entire framework of data interchange using these triples. We use a statement or a fact. And the elements of the triples can be and are often a URI reference. It can also be a literal or a blank node. RDF speaks about resources. So what is a resource? Almost anything is a resource. Like a bottle can be a resource, or I can be a resource. And the resources in RDF are identified by URIs, uniform resource identifiers. For example, in DBpedia, Norway could be represented by this URI, that http://dbpedia.org resource Norway. And also the predicate has capital would have this URI, DBpedia ontology capital. And Oslo could be this URI, DBpedia resource Oslo. So the triple that we first saw on the last slide would be represented by these three URIs. Have anyone heard of DBpedia before? No one? DBpedia is like trying to make the Wikipedia available as a database, a semantic database. Has King could have this URI. King Harald has this URI in DBpedia. They are identifiers, so think of them as strings on a special format. We need to have an identifier just like you have in relational databases, where every row in a table has to have a unique key. So in RDF, we need to have a more general key, like key that's unique almost, or it should be unique universally. As we're supposed to be able to transfer data from one data set to another, then it's not sufficient that it's unique within my table or my data set. It should be universally unique. But think of them as strings. It's not necessarily dereferenceable, just like normal URL. It can be, but it's not necessarily. You will also hear about IRIs, which are just URIs, just that it is encoded in Unicode. URLs are not the only URIs. We have also the ISBNs can be URIs on this format. Geolocations can be a URI. A mail could be a URI. And many, many more. But your eyes can also be quite hard to read and write. If you create the huge documents with triples using the URIs, or even just a couple of statements, it can be hard to read and write. So most serializations of RDF use some kind of abbreviation mechanism. We define prefixes or namespaces. That's in turtle serialization, we can define the prefix DBP, for example, to state DBpedia. So then we can use that kind of shorthand later on in the document instead of repeatedly writing dbpedia.org/resource. We can just write DBP colon. And the same for this DBpedia ontology. You can just say we can define that DBP ont, for example, as a prefix, and we can use that later on in our document when we're writing triples. Qname, yeah, it's called a qname or a prefix. A qname like DBP Oslo is just stands for this URI, http://dbpedia.org/resource/oslo. And we should remember and consider that it is considered the same thing. It's merely a shorthand for that makes it easier to write and read the documents. Remember that it's all URIs. So, for example, we can then state that Norway's capital is Oslo. This would be the original triple, right? You see that. DBpedia resource Norway, DBpedia ontology capital, DBpedia resource Oslo. We can use prefixes, as I just showed you. If you define DBP to be this URI here, and DBP ont to be this URI, then we could just write it like this. And I'm sure you agree that is much more readable. But what if we want to state that Oslo's population is 629,313? Like, we can't have one URI for each integer or each string, or imagine each real number. It's just not possible. So we use literals. A literal in RDF has a data type, just like you're used to if you come having a programming background in Java or C or C++, where a literal has a data type. A data type in URI in RDF is a URI, and it's written like this. You can use a double hat, and XSD is then a prefix for some URI, and then integer. So this triple states that Oslo has the population 629,313, and that literal is an integer. Okay? However, if we do not add a specific data type, it will just be assumed to be a string. So if you write that DBP Oslo has the official name and then the string Oslo, that will be assumed to be XSD colon string data type. The string can also have a language. We can add a language tag by appending an at and the language code. So if you write the triple at Norway has the label Norge in Norwegian language, and the second states that Norway has the label Norwegian in German. And this RDFS label is commonly used as a human readable name for a URI. So it says that this URI has that name. An RDF graph is a set of triples. So these two triples will together form an RDF graph. Often it's quite easy to represent it as a graph, visual graph, but sometimes it's not sufficient, as I said. So this triple that Norway has the capital Oslo, and Oslo have the population integer, can be drawn like this graph. We have the URIs, subject and object, as these ovals, and the predicates are labeled on these directed edges. And we state the literal in a square. So these two should be like equal. You have a graph with two triples. Then, can all knowledge be nicely represented with only triples containing URIs and literals? No, we're not able to do that. We need something else. For example, if you want to represent information about the capital of Norway, and we don't know the URI, or we don't know what the capital of Norway is, but we know the population, how could we represent that? Should we create a new kind of predicate that states that Norway has a capital with population this and that? Does that make sense? Or what if we want to represent something that doesn't really have a URI, that's something more complex? For example, that UIO has the address Problemveien 70313 Oslo. We could write it that it has an address Problemveien 70313 Oslo, but or should it be several literals that it has an address place, an address street number, address postcode? The solution to this kind of problems is to have a blank node. A blank node is a kind of a resource, but it doesn't have a URI. It doesn't really have some identifier. That way we could represent that Norway has a capital, which we don't know, but that capital has a population if we use a blank node. Like so. Norway has a capital, which is unknown for some reason, and that capital has population. The same way we could use that to model the address, where UIO has an address, which doesn't really have a unique identifier, but we can identify it by the street, the place, the postcode, and the street number, right? And there are some restrictions to where these different elements can appear in a triple. Literals and blank nodes may not appear everywhere in a triple. A URI can appear as a subject, as a predicate, and an object. Literals, however, can only be objects. So we are not going to state something about a literal. A literal is just a value. It doesn't have a relationship to something. Or it is, of course, it is not a relationship. And blank nodes can occur as in the subject position and the object position. But we're not allowing it to appear as a predicate. Why? Yeah, literals are just values. No relationships from literals are allowed. And blank nodes in the predicate position could possibly be possible to imagine, but it's deemed too meaningless and confusing. So why are we using URIs to model everything? Because URIs naturally have a global scope on the web. if you type in a URL on the web, that's only one page. It's unique globally on the web. In contrast to keys in relational databases, where you have to have a key within one table, for RDF, you would have to have a completely unique key. So if I am sending data from my computer to a different computer, I don't know anything about that data sets. I wouldn't know to how to avoid the key clashes if it wasn't unique on a global way. For example, if we're merging, if one company buys another company and they're merging their catalog for products, then this ABC company has an item with a key 123. And it buys XYZ company, which also has a 123, a product with a key 123. But as they have different namespaces, different URIs, it can still work because the URIs are not equal. URLs are also addresses, so by using URIs, we can exploit that machinery, that the links on the web, so we can actually have clickable URIs, so that you can, if you find a product and you want to go to that product's homepage, you could just click on that. It's a web of data. And triples, why do we use triples? First, it is quite easy to transform data that's in existing data relational databases or XML structures into triples. You can just describe some transformation rules quite easily, and it will extract the data from the database and transform it to triples. That's one reason. The same with XML. And we make the relationships explicit in their own right. So you no longer depend on the structure of the XML or the actual table in the database to give meaning to the data. The predicate is an element in the triple now. So there is this triple, and not like databases, which are binary predicates. It can be described in RDF. It's self-documenting. Again, it's a web of data. Why do we use RDF graphs? Yeah, it's a very simple but highly versatile format. Everything's on the same format. Everything is a triple. So, since RDF graphs are just sets of triples, common set operations are well defined. If one company buys this other company and they want to merge the data or the product catalog, you can just take the union of the RDF graphs. If you try to do that with a relational database or some tabular data, you must ensure that the dimensions matches. Like if you have a relational database table with 20 columns and you want to add that, and you want to take the union with another database and that table has 25 columns, you will have to make some adjustments to get that working. With trees, a node can only have one parent. And, of course, it's not a requirement that the graph is connected. So if you merge two data sets, it will be a new graph, but they're not necessarily interconnected in any way. They can be still disconnected. And if you want to extend the graph, just add more triples. You don't have to add new columns or add new metadata. No need to refine the database table or to reconstruct the XML schema. Okay. Now we're going over to something a bit more practical. Looking at how we describe and create RDF triples. First, RDF serializations. Do you know what the serialization is? What is a serialization? A serialization is just a way to describe a data structure in a file or for transfer. Like if you have a graph, you're speaking about nodes and edges, but yet at some point you have to have a file that represents that graph, or in a binary format possibly, but you have to have be able to write it. So that's a serialization. For RDF, there are many serializations. The first one that came out is the RDF XML, which is the W3 standard. It is, however, quite complicated. So we will not be using that in this course. You will probably see it if you export that from a Jen application or import it in some way, but we will not be working manually on RDF XML. We will be using Turtle. Turtle is a lot more readable, and it's our choice in this course. If you compare this XML snippet to this Turtle one, yeah, I think you will agree that this is easier to see. It's the same triple. Stating that Harald has the name Harald V, this string. There are also other serializations. This is N-triple, that is just stating one triple, one line. Yeah? What? Yeah, I can say it. We will be speaking about that later, but this is a prefix for this URI. And this is DBP for DBpedia, and this is for this. They are vocabularies that we commonly use to express different information, like families of vocabularies or families of statements. Like FUF is used to express statements about persons, like know persons or institutions that knows other people and has a friend, and you can state that something is a person. And the DBpedia is that what I said, that they extract information from the Wikimedia and publish that as a semantic data set. So we have RDF XML, Turtle, which we will be using, and N-triples, and there are others as well that we'll not be touching in this course, but it's good that you know that they exist, because you might encounter them in other contexts. Some N3, Trix, Trig, and even RDF JSON representation. I think it could be a good time to take a break now. I know it's early, but it's sort of shifting the focus from this background to the more practical stuff. So. Okay, shall we continue? I got a question in the break about DBpedia. So you can just open and you can open these links that are on the slides on DBpedia, and you will find this semantic information as a web page, where you can, like, if you're on this is the DBpedia page for Norway, you can go to this the capital Oslo, for example, and find information about Oslo. That is one way of displaying this semantic information. Another way is you can access it using a Sparkle query, where you can actually query for information from the data set, just like if it were a common database. So that's one place we can find find semantic technologies and RDF in use today is in DBpedia, and there are also other linked data sets that are available online that are community driven. There is one that's called Linked Open Data Cloud. Other places where you find semantic technology in use, there are some cases in industry where they use it for data access. For example, they have a big company has a lot of different information or data available in different types of databases and documents, and then they can create rules and generate triples to make everything available as one data set. So they can query that data set using Sparkle queries. And they don't really have to care about where the data resides, if it's in a relational database and which table is it in, or if it's in an XML file or whatever. So there are some use cases there. Okay, so we just left with RDF serializations. So how can we express these RDF triples? And this will be part of your mandatory assignments that will be out today. You will be creating triples. And we use Turtle as our serialization. And in Turtle, we represent URIs like this in these angle brackets. This is a URI in Turtle. DBpedia Oslo. And one statement in Turtle is a set of triples. One or two or three, and it's terminated with a period symbol. A useful abbreviation in Turtle is that you can use an A, and this means the same as RDF type. So if you want to say that Oslo is of RDF type place, you can just write the URI for Oslo and A, and the URI for place. And that's quite easy to read if you use that as well, because then you can sort of think that Oslo is a place. Yeah, Turtle allows any non-zero amount of space between the triples. If you use QNames, you can skip the angle brackets. It will represent the URIs without any special symbols. So you define the QNAME with at prefix. And for example, if we want the prefix to be DBpedia resource, we can say that we can define that as DBP colon and the URI that it's abbreviating. Then we can use that in the Turtle file. Oslo. So I can state that DBP colon Oslo, A, and the URI for place. We can also use a default namespace where you just define the prefix as colon and the URI, and terminated by and end it with a period. So now if we define the DBpedia org ontology as a default namespace, we can state the triple Oslo is a place, Oslo is of RDF type place, just using DBP colon Oslo, a colon place. Literals are written in double quotes. So if we're stating that Norway has the official name Norge, then you can write it like this, with these prefixes. Norge in double quotes and with a period. You can add the language information by appending the at NO for Norwegian language or whatever language you're writing in. So DBpedia has a label Norge in the Norwegian language. And you can add the data type URI by using these two hats after the string and the URI for the data type. So if you want to express that Oslo has a population of 629,313 and that this number is an integer, you can do it like this. Oslo, population, remember this is just a shorthand for this URI, and this state this in double quotes and then two hats and XSD integer. Yeah? In this case, this will have be string as by default if you use the double quotes. But in the next example, you can state it without explicitly stating the data types in case of a number. If you just state the number without double quotes, it will be assumed to be a number. That's also the case for Boolean data types. So you can, for example, state that Oslo is capital is true without explicitly stating the data type, just writing true without quotes. Okay. Yeah. In Turtle, you can share elements, so you don't need to necessarily write. For example, if you're writing at Oslo is of type city, Oslo has official name Oslo, which is a string, and also has a population of 629,313. We can in Turtle share, for example, the subject, so we don't have to repeat it. This can be done by using a semicolon. So the same thing could be represented as this. These are three triples, where Oslo has the type city, semicolon, then we reuse that Oslo, DBP Oslo. So then we state that the same thing has official name Oslo, and the same URI has also the population 629,313, and end by a period. So here you have like one, what do you call this? One statement, which is actually three triples ended by a period. And we can also share both the subject and the predicate, which can also be interesting sometimes. For example, if we want to add three different labels to the same URI. In this case, Norway has a label DBP Norway has the label Norway in English, and the label Norwegian in German, and the label Norge in Norwegian. We can share both the subject and the predicate by using a comma. So this would be equal to the first example. Of course, you can write it like this if you want to. But it's just shorter to write this. So here we have Norway has labels and Norway in English, comma, Norwegian in German, comma, Norge in Norwegian. So for example, if you want to write the statement that, for example, I know several peoples, I could use that kind of abbreviation using a comma. And of course, you can combine the two reusing elements by stating, for example, that Norway has labels Norway, Norwegian, and Norge in different languages using comma and then adding a semicolon at the end, stating that we reuse the subject. Norway has a capital, Oslo. So this actually adds Norway has labeled Norway, Norway has labeled Norwegian, Norway has labeled Norge, and Norway has the capital, Oslo. Any questions? Is it clear? And then to blank nodes. Blank nodes are designated in Turtle by using these square brackets, or you can give them a name. And if you're using a named blank nodes, we started by an underscore. For example, if we want to express that Norway has a capital, but we don't really know what it is, as we were speaking about earlier, but we want to express that it has a population. So we could write two triples, where we have Norway has a capital, and then we start the blank node by an underscore, and we invent some name for that, for example, someplace. And we use that same blank node in another triple to describe that it has a population of 629,313. And we can express the blank nodes using these square brackets. For example, in this case, we know that there is a place, but we don't necessarily have a URI for that, or maybe we don't know. So here we said that there is a blank node that is a place, and that place, using the semicolon, has the official name Oslo. Or we can add information within the square brackets to give predicates and objects for the blank node. For example, in this, in the case of the address, we express that URO has an address that is a blank node, but that blank node has several predicates and objects. Right. The address, the blank node address has a street that is Problemveien, a street number 7, a place Oslo, and a postcode 0313. And don't forget that these are all URIs, right? Just abbreviated URIs. Is this clear? Okay, so this is the same example as before, where we create a graph where UIO has an address with a street, place, street number, and postcode. So the question, a question for you is, why do we need to be able to give the blank node a name? I'll give you a minute to think about it. See if anyone can have a good answer. Yeah? Exactly. Because sometimes you can reuse this blank node by using semicolons, for example, but in some cases you want to reference the same blank node several places in the same in a document, and then you have to have some kind of reference to it. So if not, it will just be two different blank nodes. Very good. Other things, you can add comments to your documents. And this hash symbol will be a comment, just like in Python. The comment will be from the hash symbol and to the end of the line. So you can have it on a single line, or you can have it after a triple or a statement. And if you, for some reason, want to include the double quotes in a string, you can escape those double quotes using this forward slash, whatever it's called. So if you want to express that some guy has the name James Mr. Man Olson, you can express that using this escaping those special characters. Okay. So now we looked at the most of the syntax. Yeah. One slide before. Yeah. There's a double quote. This colon? Yeah, this is the default namespace. So we define a default namespace in the beginning of the turtle file to be able to not write the entire URI when we're writing. You can show that. Again, that was, this makes sense, where we define the prefix colon to be, for example, this DBpedia ontology URI. So whenever we start something with a colon, that will be substituted with this URI. So this official name is actually will be interpreted as http://dbpedia.org/ontology/official name. Yeah? Exactly. Okay, vocabularies are families of related notions. We usually use the same prefix or namespaces for them. You've seen this RDF colon or FOF colon, RDFS. Some important well-known prefixes and namespaces are RDF, RDFS, FOF, and DC terms. There is usually a description about the vocabulary at the namespace URI. For example, we could go to one of these, for example, this friend of a friend. XMLN, if I can open that. Yeah, and you will get the specification for that. You can find the, for example, there is a person, for a person, that you would use to say that this URI represents a person, and different predicates that you can use. For example, interests. As account, so workplace homepage, and this, for example, it knows. You can say that one person knows another person. In the same way, you will find information if you go to these other base URIs online. The prefix is not standardized, but in practice we all use the same. So you can say that they are standardized. So you can actually write, you can actually define RDF to be this FOAF vocabulary, but it will be very hard to understand what you're writing in your document. So please don't do that. Some example resources, RDF. We use this RDF vocabulary to describe the RDF graph. You can say that this is something is a statement, a subject, a predicate, object, and of course, of a type. We use RDFS to describe the vocabularies we use. For example, we introduce the notion of a class and a subclass, subproperty. We can state that some property has certain domain range, and we use label. We will be looking at this later in the course. So for some examples are that we state that Oslo is of RDF type place, and you can use the shorthand A, that it will mean exactly the same. You can state that Norway has a label, RDFS label Norge, and that capital is a subclass of a city. Some other vocabularies are the FOAF and the Dublin Core. FOAF includes name about persons and relations. For example, we can say that that's examples are that I am of a type person, that I know this other person, Martin Giese. The Dublin Core vocabulary has information about library metadata. So we can, for example, say, use that vocabulary to say that I am the creator of these lecture slides, for example. Do you understand why we need that and why we use that? Where do we find RDF? We find RDF in files, in some serialization, for example, our XML RDF, or in the Turtle serialization. You will be writing Turtle files. In files, we typically have small RDF graphs with a few, maybe 100 triples, using vocabulary FOAF. Yeah, vocabulary are typically on the web in RDF files. And for example, Martin Giese has a friend of a friend file at his home, at his home space. You can take a look at that. And bigger data sets are usually accessed through Sparkle endpoints, where the data is in a triple store. That's similar to a database. So you write the query and you get kind of a table or data back. Yeah, you serve that from an endpoint as a result of Sparkle query. You can expose the data in different formats. For example, as we saw if you enter into the DBpedia page, you get an actual page where you can click from link to link. You can also use Sparkle query on the DBpedia database. If you enter this, if you go into this address, you can look at that after the Sparkle lecture. There are also many tools that convert data to RDF from existing formats, such as relational databases, Excel, CSV. I know you might have this R2RML towards the end of the course. I'm not sure if you'll be having it, where you actually write rules for how to translate between a relational database and RDF triples. These tools can be found in the w3.org converter to RDF. What about creating URIs? sometimes you will be describing your own things and you will have to find a URI for that, which is not existing. It's not trivial. Naming is difficult, so whenever you can reuse vocabularies, use vocabularies that already exists for a particular domain. These DC terms, FOAF, use them. And URIs are also addresses, so you could possibly come into problems with publishing if you use an address that you don't have control over, but somebody owns. Adhere to the policies described in the best practice documents. You will find that here. Cool, URIs for semantic web. Use example URI for prototyping and documentation. Tim Berners-Lee, he published a 5-star web data recipe. Where the first, you get 1 star if you actually make the data available online, openly under any open license. But it's better if you publish the data as some kind of structured data. For example, it's better to publish an XML table, an Excel table, over a scanned image of a table. It's better even if you use some non-proprietary format, CSV instead of Excel. And even better if you use the URIs to identify the data items and make them referable on the web. And even better, 5 stars if you can link your data to other data to provide context. The point of publishing data in RDF, as described in this lecture, is to have self-documented and self-describing data. It decouples data from applications, so you no longer need to the information in the database to understand the meaning of the data. It lightens the programming burden, and it makes us be able to write applications on this general data, exploiting this knowledge online. Some subtleties. Yeah, URIs are just strings. It's not like this global identification service. So you can actually use any URI to describe your data. For example, you could say that this bottle has the URI RDF type. There's nothing stopping you to do that, but don't do that. Simple rule of thumb is you should use a namespace that you own, for example, your home space at the university. Then that should keep you out of trouble. And put data on the addresses, and trust is still a challenge for the semantic web community. That's one reason why the big industries keep their data they don't keep it online accessible for everybody. Yeah, and I told you in the beginning that we use these graphs to describe and understand the RDF, but it's not always sufficient. We can easily describe this triple. Norway has the capital Oslo as a graph with a directed labeled relationship. However, we want to state information about the properties themselves. For example, we want to state that RDF type is of type property. That is not trivial to draw as a graph, because here we have the same URI both as the subject and the predicate. So the graphs are a set of triples, it's not real graphs. And the set of nodes and subject and objects or edges and predicates, they're not necessarily disjoint. In practice, they are often disjoint, but we want data resides in the nodes and we have some relation between those, between the data. But sometimes we also want to state information about, for example, the edges. They have some sub properties, for example, and they have types. Another thing is that you have, if you have two turtle files and you want to merge them, you have to be careful about the blank nodes. For example, if I have one file where Martin owns a car that's a blank node, he called that my car, and that my car is a Lotus Esprit. And then Martin Giese has another car, but he also named that my car as the blank node. And that is a very different car. It's a ICV Sahara. So if you merge those files, then you have a problem because they will reference the same blank nodes. So, and will result in this this graph where Martin owns a blank car that is a blank node of type Spirit, and Martin Giese owns my car, which is one of these. So just so if you want to merge two RDF files or two turtle files, you should check for duplicated blank node names. It's an easy solution. It's just you have to rename the blank nodes in one of the files, and it will work out nicely. RDF also lets us form more complicated statements. For example, data structures such as a list. We can describe that. For example, this course has some lecturers, and there are several of us, Martin Giese and me, and this Martin, what is his name? We can state that as in 3060 has lectures, RDF, that's a blank node which has one predicate RDF first, which points to this first lecture, and then there is another predicate that points to another blank node, which again has a first predicate and a rest predicate, which is then another blank node, and then another first, and then the last rest predicate should be to RDF nil. Turtle has a shorthand for that as well, so we can just write it that has lectures and a parenthesis, and then state all three lectures, then with a period. Another more complicated statement is if we want to state, for example, that Leif Harald, he was having had this lecture last year, he thinks that Vim is better than Emacs and Martin does not. Then we could say that this blank node statement has a subject Vim, predicate better than, and an object Emacs. And then we could just create a triple that I think that this statement and Martin thinks not that statement. Is it clear? Any questions? That kind of reification allows us to describe agents, beliefs, knowledge, or metadata, meta information about statements. Summary. So RDF is a general format for describing resources, where we represent all the data as triples, consisting of a URI for describing resources, literal for data, or blank nodes for unknown data are more complex relationships. An RDF graph is just a set of triples. It extends the linking structure of the web by adding predicates as predicates in the named link, so we can know what kind of relationship there is. It allows metadata as part of the data. And it allows us to easily link data to other data sets. So independent of any application, RDF is a framework that we can build up on. And yeah, that's it for today. Remember, the mandatory assignment will be out today, and you will have delivery Friday next week. Any questions?